Hello, reader. You're plugged in to another episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. We hope you enjoy it.
Nicola, such a pleasure to be chatting to you about, firstly, your book, but I also want to delve into so many themes around what has brought you to this point right here, right now. So again, what a privilege. I think I spent hours just paging through and reflecting on your book. Tell me, how has all of this come to the point where we are right now?
Well, thank you for that. It's a cliche to say it's been a very intense, long journey mm-hmm. to birth this book. This has been probably one of the fastest moving years in my life mm-hmm. because I've also had my first child. So 2025, it's really a combination of different things. I think years of being a student, a mm-hmm. scholar. I did my doctorate at Oxford, and I published a more theoretical book on thinking about landscape and the emergence of a critical landscape approach. Mm-hmm. And then my practice as an artist, which really involved almost more than a decade of traveling to different parts of my country. I'm Namibian born, and really thinking about place and landscape in a more critical and perhaps sensitive way. So 2025 is, a year of miracles, because getting this book into the world really was a quite a feat, because I worked with he's regarded as the king of print, mm-hmm. Gerhard Steidl. I mean, when it comes to actually producing fine art books and photo books, he is, really a true master. He's completely obsessed with detail, but there is a very long queue of artists that are waiting in line. And Producing the Distance Within, it came out, the first copy that I held was in September, mid-March. It involved almost a four-year journey. So about seven trips to Göttingen, where he has his printing press, and many exchanges by email and the phone. I could really spend an entire hour just discussing the eccentricities of this man. There's even a documentary on him. For me to actually have this book, which reflects as I said, this marriage between my scholarship as an art historian, but also my practice as an artist, and I try to bring these two worlds together. And I also recently returned to live more permanently in South Africa, between South Africa and Namibia. I've been living in Germany for the last couple of years in Berlin. And it's great to really come home. And, I needed that time away to see what it meant to be Namibian from that distance. But being back here is just wonderful, because it's such an important place for so many things, for creativity, for sensing my homeland.
So, Nicola, if 2025 was a time of birthing a baby, a new book, then 2026 is also a time of perhaps re-examining the distance within. You spoke about Namibia. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, I also have a link to Namibia, because my grandmother came from Rehoboth.
Amazing.
And that made this feel like I was sort of delving into my own history. So I really felt that I could spend time with the book. And I examined the images and also the themes that you're exploring about identity and colonialism, but it's such a beautiful, complicated country.
Mm.
What do you think Namibia adds to you as an artist, having that as part of your soul and your DNA?
Mm. So, we can't really choose where we're born. It's a cosmic lottery. Mm. And I happen to be born as a Namibian of European ancestry. So my mother is South African. My background is, she's Afrikaans. My father is Germany, was born in Germany. So to be born in a particular socio-political era, I was born in the 80s, and this was the end of, you know, the, sort of the last decade of apartheid in Namibia, really left a sort of subliminal imprint on my psyche. And I think I've spent a lot of my young adulthood thinking about what that means, and to be also a child that has gone from the apartheid era into the post-apartheid era, and then actually into the present, which is, you know, these are quite, you know, in some ways, hugely transformative years, very turbulent. But I think going back to your question about how Namibia shaped me, I mean, that's the thing. Namibia is one of the least populated countries in the world. I grew up, you know, camping in the bushveld, going on trips in a beat-up old Land Rover with my father. And, you know, experiencing a particular kind of Namibia. And I think only with time did I start to unpack the sociopolitical complexity. And I think it was sometime in my teen years where I actually came across a informal memorial site to fallen Herero, of a Herero. And I remember asking my parents about this. And that's that experience, you know, there was this beautiful old wild olive tree that was growing near the site. And it felt something that was incredibly sacred about that place. And this, that resonance stayed with me. And that emotion, I wanted to understand in more depth. So I think Namibia, as I mentioned, is this vast country. And it can very easily be portrayed as empty, empty of memory, of history, that it's got this sort of ancient, primordial layer, or what would you call it? Like it doesn't contain human memory, but there's a lot of that. And I think this project with this book actually was about unpeeling those hidden memories that you can find, you know, in the marks, scars, and very subtle traces on the land across Namibia. And Joanne, it's very moving to hear actually that you have this link to Rehoboth, because Rehoboth is a complex town. And perhaps, you know, when we speak further, you know, Rehoboth also was a site where a certain Dr. Eugene Fisher, he did his, I believe it was his doctoral research, or you know, he was a German scientist, eugenicist, and he based his theory of race on actually studying the Rehoboth community. And there's a very unfortunate, very dark history linked between almost Rehoboth, and it takes you all the way to Auschwitz.
This is the thing for me. It's sort of when you speak about Namibia, and you speak, you know, when you spoke about the vastness and the emptiness, for me driving through there, actually, I think during 2020, our last born was 4 months old, and we just did a trip through Namibia because I wanted to go and show them where I'm from. I think as I'm getting older, I'm starting to unpack a bit more. And we drove through Rehoboth, and there was something very spiritual but almost sad about it as well. So I'm very keen to read up a bit more about Dr. Eugene Fisser. But for me, when you say Namibia often is portrayed as vast and almost seen as empty, I feel that God lives in Namibia. It's the one place I feel in the world that I can actually hear God speaking to me. And I know this sounds so esoteric, but there's something so beautiful about the vastness, the nothingness, and yet that silence speaks so loudly to one in Namibia. Did you find that when you
absolutely
were doing your photos?
And I think that is the tension, you know, is this almost sublime that you experience there. There's something, you know, that falls beyond human memory. And I think that tension between the deeply, deeply ancient, the sort of geographical time, and then the immediacy of the now, I try to somehow bring those two together in, you know, a series of work, you know, as I mentioned, that took several years. There's a wonderful saying by the Khoisan or the Bushman. They said that actually God made him maybe when he was angry.
Oh, because so I think yeah that one, and I'm actually going to note that one.
Well, because you know it's so harsh, it's so
you need to be very strong to survive.
You've got to be very strong. But you know these endless different forms of desert. You know you've got Damra land and you've got the Kalahari, and then you've got the South, and there, you know, the incredible complexity and the differentiations of deserts. But to survive there, one would need, you know, you really need to have your wits about you.
Mm.
And I think that goes back to what you were saying about God. You know, the desert also has a kind of a biblical quality to it. If you think about St. John the Baptist, you know, going into the desert for, was it 40 days or 40 nights? It has that in it as well. But again, that's the socialization, bringing in the kind of that Christian background, which I think this book also looks at. It's very much about thinking more probingly at what it means to be socialized in a particular environment from a particular positionality and identity, and what we hang on the wall and what surrounds us, what that says about who we are and the values that we hold.
Absolutely. I think looking at the, I mean, there's a beautiful essay also in there where I saw the references again to what we hang on our walls, and looking at the different types of families in Namibia and how we portray, I mean, for example, this particular image.
That image is, in fact,
That looks like my grandfather. And my grandfather was a gardener for a wealthy white family. And there's so much said in that particular image.
I think that image, as you mentioned, it's really almost like it could be a starting point of this project or this sort of critical inquiry, because it's a typical scene. You see a white family sitting at a table. It's sort of got a bit of a middle-class atmosphere, black and white from the 1950s. You know, the patriarch sitting at the head of the table. The woman on the left is, in fact, my grandmother. And then the little girl is actually my mum. And we see standing adjacent to the table, a black man who worked for the family. But there are all these dynamics in a very intimate space, but hanging on the wall are these little landscape paintings. And, you know, that's what I grew up with, are these seemingly benign, innocent images of these, you know, of the landscape, the Namibian landscape, of European landscapes. But there was a deep ideology imprinted in, subconscious ideology imprinted in a lot of those landscapes, of trying to create an aesthetic that would perhaps make Namibians or South Africans of European ancestry feel that they had some sort of a claim to these landscapes.
It feels as if the land was not occupied before.
There we go.
So we did
terra nullius.
Yes,
terra nullius. And in fact, you know, the Pieniev, the famous Pieniev paintings. I mean, that's also very much these dramatic
open landscapes.
And you, let's face it, both in Namibia and South Africa, when you travel through, the landscape leans in everywhere. It's so dramatic. And you can imagine artists coming, German artists, Dutch artists coming from Europe, and, you know, being struck when they arrived here, even, you know, here in the Bay of Cape Town. I mean, these monumental mountains, and they felt they had to paint it. But often what was, you know, almost anecdotally neglected were the stories and the persons in those landscapes. And so little by little, my attempt was to actually unpeel that and really ask what these works that hung on the walls of not only my family, but my peers and, you know, my community, what they said. And I attempted to take that further.
It made me think and feel so much, because when my grandma, who was illiterate, when she spoke about her upbringing and her childhood in Rehoboth, unfortunately, I don't have any written records or photographs of it, but it was a different time. And it is interesting to see how all our histories are actually intertwined.
Absolutely.
And we all have some kind of claim to how we all turned out because we're all actually connected in some way.
That question about being somehow, I wouldn't say trapped in a moment of history, one era, but each of us, we are shaped by very much the politics of the time. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, a turning point was coming across Santo Mufagen's work. I don't know if you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. He's he unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but there was a very powerful exhibition of his work in Johannesburg across from the Goodman Gallery at Warren Siebert's, mm-hmm. black and white images. And it was a tiny little catalog that Warren Siebert had printed. Mm-hmm. And this was a black photographer that had been living in, call it the townships. But for him, he was fascinated with the genre of landscape. Mm-hmm. And he said, in this, one of the first lines in this little catalog was, landscape is a genre for those artists who have a God complex.
Oh, wow. Okay, wait. I want to take a moment and think. Landscape is a genre for artists who have a God
complex.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. and yet he was drawn to it. And little by little, he also interrogated this genre. But for him, it was about when he was very much a photographer. He grew up during apartheid mm-hmm. and then in the transition years. And he saw his camera as being, a tool to psychically and spiritually reclaim the land. So, he grew up when obviously there were the pass laws and he couldn't travel freely. And he said, for those of European or white background, there was no fear or tension of traveling from A to B, but in South Africa at the time when you're in the 70s, 80s as a black man, there was always a sense of there's another level of fear, a black man, a woman, a child. So for him, the power, the symbol of the camera to photograph. And then he traveled all the way up to Namibia. And in fact, he went to southern Namibia, to Naminois, to Lüderitz. I think he also probably went through Rehoboth. And he started to also think about German colonialism. And that ended up actually taking him to visit some of the concentration camps in Germany and really deeply engage with the idea of landscape as a symbol of trauma and aftermath landscape. So Santu, an incredible writer, he also published a beautiful set of books with Steidl, the Black Photo Album, phenomenal book where he kind of reappropriated late 19th century studio portraits of young black families, of men and women. And he tried to tell, in just a few, lines in the captions, about the aspirations, the desires of these young, of these sitters. So Santu was also very much key to my thinking about this project that you see here in front of you.
I'm actually getting quite emotional when you speak about all of this because it's so true. I mean, even your title, The Distance Within, I think I feel there's so much self or there's so much introspection that you're doing and you're inviting your reader to actually do introspection. I think we live in this digital era where we're constantly overstimulated and inundated with messages and we actually forget to listen to ourselves and perhaps our ancestors or our conscious that's trying to speak to us. The title, The Distance Within, where did that come from?
I think you've just touched on something very important. It's just trying, this book requires a bit of a slowing down. I think the images are very subtle in what they're trying to portray and sometimes we're actually trying to photograph what's not there. But that idea of the distance within, it's this impossible attempt to try and understand these entangled, unequal, complex histories, to reckon with, to reckon with my own ancestry, which is often an uncomfortable place because of my whiteness and my these histories of colonial white settlers, and how I am, even though I'm not directly associated with those traumatic histories, how I am implicated. And I think this book is very much for those who have the patience and the interest to really think about their own possibilities of implication, as opposed to just seeing themselves either victim or perpetrator, you know, or coming from one or the other.
That's powerful, yeah.
That's, I think, what this this body of work tries to do, is think about the implicated subject.
You know what I enjoyed about going through this book is going through it with my children. And of course, they're now of South African by default, also because of my grandma, Namibian, but now also German ancestry. My husband's from Munich. And there are these conversations that need to be had. Mm. I also think, you know, it's so true where you say victim or perpetrator, or how we find where we belong in the story, or how we see ourselves as part of the story. Because I do think a lot of the hurt that's felt in South Africa is because a lot of things are just swept under the rug in the name of the Rainbow Nation, and we're all happy now, and we're not. There's a lot that we still have to unpack.
I think that's a fascinating place for your, you know, position for your children to be raised in, because they contain, as we all do, those multitudes, but from probably quite a, wouldn't say, quite an extreme position, being, you know, of this Namibian Rehoboth ancestry, but, you know, their father being German. And it'll be very interesting to see what they do with that beautiful, complex entanglement in themselves. And I think that again shows you that identity is not sort of so fixed or uniform. And in our, you know, this age of mass distraction and sound bites, you know, to try and fight for complexity and to hold those contradictions, that's really important. And I think, Joanne, it's probably your strength, is that you have this ability to understand, you know, you bridge worlds.
I appreciate that.
And identities, and you're a bridge builder.
I appreciate that, Nicola. I think that that to me is, again, I really want to make art more accessible, and having these conversations and giving people the space and the platforms in which to have conversations, I think that still makes us human. Mm. And as you said, we live in this time of mass distraction, and it's so true. How often do we have the privilege of silence to navigate our own distances within?
That's beautifully said. And in the end, you know, as the artist or the creator of a book like this, you know, I've attempted to open something up without being didactic and, you know, on the nose, like, this is the message, and I've got, you know, I'm going to force it down your throat. And it is subtle. And there is a responsibility when, you know, a viewer, an audience actually looks at a work of art or opens a book like this, they also have to do the work. They need to take the time and try and unpack it. And the reality is, maybe, you know, only a few will do that. But, you know, it's all about just maybe reaching one or two that'll take it further, and not just quickly flip through the pages, but actually try and engage. Sean O'Toole writes a phenomenal essay. You know, if anybody's listening to this conversation, if you don't have the time to read the, I think the 6 or 7 essays in the back by phenomenal memory scholars and activists, I think Sean, it actually left me with goosebumps, because he understood. He traveled to Namibia. He understood what I was trying to get at. And, you know, as you know, he's a searingly kind of astute critic. But he speaks about the commingling of public and private memory. So how those two come into some sort of a tension or dialectic. And I think that's a good starting point if you want to read one of the essays. However, there's also a phenomenal poem extract from Gift Udera, who's a young Namibian performance artist of Herero background. And he describes this moment where we actually collaborated, where an old apartheid/German colonial monument was being removed in the heart of Namibia, in the heart of Windhoek, the capital. And in that moment, he does this incredible dance wearing the undergarment of the Herrera dress, which is also full of symbolism. And as a queer young activist, he speaks about this moment of incredible liberation where he, as a queer body, could go into that space and claim that almost even as an impermanent monument for that moment. But in that in that instance, there's also this tension of two elderly men from his community who came to challenge his place and his position of being there. So it was also about this intergenerational struggle. So he writes a poem which is really about man of war, leave my house, you know, and looking at a sort of embedded toxic masculinity that's in society even today across different communities.
It is amazing because in a city like Cape Town, one takes it for granted in terms of the rights of all people. And yet when you travel elsewhere on the continent, you realize not everyone is held in the same safety as people of queer identities are here.
No, the constitution here is phenomenal. It really, I'm quite sad that in some ways, Namibia having been for a period considered by South Africans as the fifth province, but also drawing from a lot of, you know, the kind of institutional frameworks of South Africa, that they, that somehow there is this very conservative, almost homophobic law that is still imprinted into the constitution and has caused a lot of trauma and, you know, issues for queer people in my country.
Nicola, I appreciate this so much. I mean, there are so many reasons why I'm going to go and have a third and a fourth and a fifth look at this book. But as you said, I look forward to jumping into the pages deeply with my children because, yeah, you've really afforded us a beautiful space in which to have dialogues. So thank you very much for joining us on this fabulous episode with Jonathan Ball Publishers. We're really excited about your book and thank you for being part of Audacity too.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of PageCast, brought to you by Jonathan Ball Publishers. Did you love what you heard? Don't just stop at the stories. Buy the books. Visit your favorite bookstore to grab your next read. And remember to subscribe, share, and join us again next week for more fascinating conversations. Until then, happy reading.